I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Earlier this month, House Republicans released their new tax plan, and last week, Senate Republicans introduced theirs. While there are differences between the two proposals, the GOP leadership promises that the final bill will ease the tax burden on the middle class. Here's House Speaker Paul Ryan touting the Tax Cut and Jobs Act.
The Tax Cut and Jobs Act will deliver real relief for people in the middle, people who are also striving to get there. With this plan, the typical family of four will save $1,182 a year on their taxes. For many families, having an additional $1,182 more will make a real difference. That $1,182 more covers about a year's worth of gas for your car. It covers your family's phone bill for the year, depending on how much data, of course, your kids use.
We asked Damian Paletta to walk us through the numbers to see who would end up winners and losers if some version of these plans becomes the law. President Trump says he wants a finished bill on his desk by Christmas. Paletta is senior economics correspondent for The Washington Post. And Damian Paletta, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin with the middle class. Is this a middle class tax cut? And I realize we're talking about two different plans, but nonetheless, what do you see?
That's right. I mean, I have to say the claims are pretty misleading. I mean, on net, yes, a middle-class family would get a tax cut. But there's so many different definitions of middle-class in this country, obviously. You know, a middle-class family in California is much different than a middle-class family in Mississippi. And so, you know, there will be cutting tax rates across the board. They will be doubling the standard deduction, and they will be expanding the child tax credit. But they're also going to be making changes that could push up taxes on middle-class families. For example, you know, if you live in a state with high state taxes, high property taxes, New York, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, California, you could see your taxes go up because you will no longer be able to deduct those taxes you pay to your state or to your municipality. So, you know, this is going to have a different impact for a lot of people. Some people could see a real benefit, but some people could see their taxes go up in the middle class.
Who would you say are the biggest winners? And I realize the president hasn't signed this yet, but as you look at these two proposals.
Right. And so obviously they're kind of marketing this as a middle class focused tax bill. But really the biggest winners are large corporations that would see their tax rates go down from 35% to 20%. Businesses that are structured in a way that they pay through the individual income tax code. These can be smaller companies, but they can also be large law firms, for example. They're known as pass-throughs, but they are structured in such a way that they don't pay the corporate income tax, so their taxes would go down as well. And also, you know, the wealthy would see a big tax benefit, obviously, by getting rid of the estate tax in the House bill or really scaling back the estate tax in the Senate bill, and also the elimination of the alternative minimum tax. Those are things that could really help the wealthy. So, you know, we see a lot of benefits there. I think we're trying to still get to the bottom of what the impact on the middle class would be. But obviously, a lot of people think the wealthy and corporations would really come out well with these proposals.
My understanding is that the estate tax applies to something like 5,000, obviously very wealthy families. And one of the arguments to get rid of the estate tax was that it is a double taxation, essentially paying a second tax on the estate tax as it is structured today. But if you look at this GOP plan where they basically say that you will not get a deduction for state and local taxes, isn't that double taxation?
Sure. And I think it can be kind of misleading because, yes, some of the money would be taxed, is taxed twice, you know, when an estate tax kicks in, which is, you know, if it's an estate's over $5.5 million for an individual or if a, you know, a married couple dies at the same time, it's an $11 million estate. So, but there could also be situations where they made investments in those estates that they never paid taxes on. So if the investments were kind of held in perpetuity, they were never taxed. So I think both sides kind of give misleading characterizations of what the estate tax does and doesn't do. It doesn't look like the estate tax will be repealed just based on the way some Senate Republicans feel about it. Susan Collins of Maine and Mike Rounds of North Dakota has said, you know, we shouldn't get rid of the estate tax. It's just going to benefit the wealthy too much. So they're probably going to scale back the estate tax, but it looks unlikely that it'll be completely repealed.
What's going to happen this week? And will there be, do you think, some kind of bill that Republicans all agree on by Friday, for instance?
Great question. This is a really pivotal week for the, you know, Republican tax cut effort. The House of Representatives is expected to pass their version of the tax cut bill by Thursday or Friday. You know, shouldn't be that hard. They have a big majority there, but it's a huge step because, you know, the White House is really looking for some big legislative victories to go into 2018. And by getting the House to approve this, given, you know, how there's been some hand-wringing over specifics, it would be a big step. And the Senate Finance Committee, which is the tax writing committee in the Senate, they're planning to hold a vote on their version of the bill this week, starting today on Monday. And the bill only came out on Thursday, so we're still kind of pouring through the details. And there's going to be some changes made, too, which could obviously have, you know, big implications. But they're hoping to pass their bill by the end of the week through the Senate Finance Committee and then possibly try to pass it through the Senate the week after Thanksgiving. And obviously, you know, a bill can't become a law until we have matching House and Senate versions.
Right.
So they'll have to reconcile the differences, which, you know, are not insignificant. But if they can get that far in just a couple weeks, you know, they have a good chance of getting this thing passed into law.
And how many pages of bill are we talking about, or bills, should I say?
I think it's over 400. The House bill is over 400 pages. Remember, it makes changes to the taxes that virtually every American pays, and it's kind of broken into sections that would affect the taxes that individuals and families pay, a section that for taxes that corporations pay, and a section about kind of the international treatment of taxes, multinational companies or companies that you know, are based overseas but, you know, have business dealings in the United States. So it's pretty complicated stuff. And, you know, I think we've already seen a couple hundred pages of amendments filed to the Senate bill. So, you know, these things could grow even more potentially, you know, based on how things shake out this week.
Do the Democrats have any role to play in these negotiations?
You know, it doesn't seem like it. They do continue to meet with the White House. There was a meeting last week with senior White House officials and about seven Senate Democrats. Obviously, the White House's math would get a lot easier if a couple Democrats would say they would support the plan. And right now, because right now they only have a 52-48 majority, the Republicans in the Senate. And you have this, obviously, you know, this race in Alabama that's going to happen in December for a Senate seat. And if that doesn't go the Republicans' way, then it could have big implications, because I think the you know, the next senator would be sworn in early January. Maybe they wouldn't have it wrapped up by then. So they have a real thin margin of error, and if a couple Senate Republicans are uncomfortable with any specific provision, then you know, this thing kind of goes down in the Senate like a lot of bills do. So they would love to have some support from Democrats, but right now we haven't seen them make any changes to the bill in a way that would try to lure Democrats, you know, into their camp.
Let me read a couple of comments. An email from Milton who says, when the tax cuts end up driving up the deficit by the advertised $1.5 trillion, the Republicans will call for cuts to programs because we can't afford them. These will be cuts to programs for working class and middle class Americans. And picking up on that, they do have to, I guess, abide by this threshold of $1.5 trillion. They can't add to the debt. Do I have that right, Damian?
That's exactly right. And you're kind of on the big issue. There's a Senate rule called the Byrd Rule that stipulates that the, you know, a tax plan that's passed through reconciliation, which, you know, is sort of a technicality, but it's really important, that they want to pass this tax cut with only 50 or 51 votes, right? Not the 60 that you usually need in the Senate. And to do that, you cannot pass a tax cut that adds to the deficit after 10 years. So they sort of bought themselves this $1.5 trillion cushion for the first 10 years, which is, you know, it's a lot of money to add to the debt. But they have to design it in a way that it cannot add to the debt in the second, you know, in year 11. And right now their bill, they acknowledged last week, does not meet that requirement. Their bill would add to the deficit in year 11. So because when you lock in, you know, corporate tax rates at 20% and down from 35%, of course you're going to get less tax revenue than you would if you had higher taxes. And so they have to fix that, and it looks like we're going to find out kind of their plan in the next few days in the Senate on how they plan to fix it. Now, the choices they have to make are not easy ones. They can either propose having the whole thing sunset after 10 years, so the tax rates snap back up, kind of like what we saw with the Bush tax cuts in 2001 and 2003, or they could put some kind of legislative time bomb in the bill that would have a big tax increase of another variety in the year 2027, I think under the assumption that, you know, a later Congress would go in and just, you know, remove it. That's kind of a legislative gimmick that I think some Republicans might not go for. But those are kind of the tough choices that they have to make in the next few days if they want to get this thing to pass, you know, Senate rules.
Let me read another email, this one from Dave. Does anyone really think the 500 largest American corporations will bring that money into the U.S. and pay the money that they owe in taxes? He's saying $620 billion in taxes. Of course, that requires, Damon, you looking into your crystal ball. And it does, these plans do call for reducing the corporate tax rate. But do these corporations pay 35% today?
No, they don't. And some pay nowhere close. Some pay almost no taxes. But some pay quite a bit of taxes. And I think, you know, the questioner has a really good point. There are several trillion dollars that U.S. companies have stored overseas from, you know, overseas earnings. Now, whether they've, you know, twisted themselves into a pretzel to try to avoid paying U.S. taxes and have, you know, operations in the Bahamas or Ireland that are, you know, kind of brass plates only. You know, I think that differs from company to company. But, you know, the president has said that there's several trillion dollars sitting offshore that this bill would try to lure back to the U.S. And his idea is that if this money comes back into the U.S., it'll just by its sheer force help spur economic growth. You know, it'll help raise wages. Companies will reinvest that money in the U.S. It'll, you know, drive up the stock market and do a host of other things. And, you know, it's possible that's true. I think, you know, if we look at what has happened in the past, there was a similar experience during the Bush administration where they had something called a tax holiday, essentially let companies bring money back at a low tax rate in a small window. And I think, you know, both sides, Democrats and Republicans, acknowledge that that money was not reinvested back into the economy. It was used to push up, you know, executive compensation. It was used to, you know, for companies to buy back dividends or to give dividends and buy back stock. And it was also used by companies that ended up laying off workers. So, you know, it's not necessarily a given that if that money comes back, it's going to lead to a big jolt or a shot in the arm to the economy.
Damien, almost out of time here. Oh, no time to really answer this. But are we talking then about trickle down? Is this the thinking behind these Republican plans?
It sounds an awful lot like it.
It does.
Think they feel like they have economic theory to prove that it won't happen, but I think people are going to have to make a, you know, big gamble that that's going to be what happens.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today. We do time shoehorning a lot of information into 12 and a half minutes. Damien Poletta, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome. And he's senior economics correspondent for The Washington Post. And he made mention of bringing some of those corporate profits back to shore. We're going to be talking about what is known now as the Paradise Papers. We'll be talking about that with Jesse Drucker from The New York Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.